we're talking about state unemployment data and what the jobs picture is shaping up to be. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So broadly speaking across the country, the pandemic economic recovery appears to be accelerating. Employers adding 916,000 jobs last month. That's from the Labor Department's March jobs report. Manufacturing employment rose by 53,000 jobs in March. We'll talk more about that sector later. How has your employment and job situation changed over the last year? Did the pandemic cause your job to shut down? Are you actively looking, retraining, or have you stopped looking for a job now? Share what's going on, 800-642-1234. Dennis Winters is chief economist for the State Department of Workforce Development. Dennis, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having us in.
Yeah, good morning. Let's start with some numbers then. Where do we stand with the state's unemployment rate?
Well, the state's unemployment rate, February numbers, is 3.8% on a seasonally adjusted basis. We'll have the March numbers out in about a week, actually day after tomorrow. And so we'll have, we're expecting the same or improvement with that because we're seeing more jobs created and the economy getting back on track.
So more jobs being created, the economy getting back on track. You know, for an economist, that sounds pretty optimistic.
Well, it is. It is and has been, a long time, an arduous year for us. So, as the pandemic happened, it happened quickly and it happened rapidly with layoffs. And then it's been building up, over the last year, slowly but surely, not as fast as certainly we would have liked. But we're making progress, and I think 2021 is going to take us into continued growth and better times.
All right. So, economists for a while were debating whether it was going to be a V-shaped recovery or a W-shaped recovery or a U-shaped recovery. What does this recovery look like in Wisconsin?
Well, it's very much a sharp V. Mm-hmm. We haven't recovered all the way yet, and other people have talked about a K recovery, where you have different legs of the K coming up, with some industries doing much better than others, and some of the well. So what we've seen is, the hospitality industry, for example, and a lot of the low unskilled jobs haven't been recovering very quickly. Where on the other hand, there's been a lot of financial gains and use of more high-tech jobs, in the sense of IT and things like that, and a lot of jobs that you've been able to do at your home or in another location out of the workplace.
Okay, so it sounds like more skilled labor, remote labor, is bouncing back more quickly. Hospitality industry still lagging with job growth. How do we compare to other Midwestern states?
Other Midwestern states, we're about middle of the pack. I mean, we've got recovery. Other states that have a higher concentration of manufacturers, like Ohio and Michigan, have weathered a little better than we have. We've got a little higher concentration in our hospitality industry. But the fact that we've got a good manufacturing base has helped us through. States like Hawaii and Nevada took a severe hit because of all the jobs they have in their tourism and leisure and hospitality and accommodations industries. So we're doing pretty well. And depending on, kind of what variables you look at and over what period of time, Wisconsin's doing pretty well.
Well, let's look more closely at the layers here. And, what you would say of workers who have left the labor force in the pandemic and are not yet looking for work. Some economists have called this segment a hidden casualty of the pandemic. Whether these workers have been sidelined because of childcare or other family responsibilities or health concerns. What do you see in those numbers?
Well, we look at two numbers, particularly when we look at unemployment rates, and one is the workforce and one is employment. And to us, that's two different things. And jobs and employment are two different things for us too. We're a little persnickety that way. But what we've seen is the labor force has actually been fairly steady. People have either there was a sharp drop and then a sharp pop again, and we're level. So the workforce has been intact. People are figuring they will get jobs back, so they're remaining in the workforce. They're looking at things, but yeah, it's been hard on the home front with schools, being closed and opened, and and things like that, and the other responsibilities on the home front that have had to been taken care of, and some of the fear of going back to work too early and bringing some of the disease and sickness back to the community.
You know, women in their prime working years have been really hit hard, have quit the labor force at nearly twice the rate of men. That's new research out of Wells Fargo. And it can be perhaps because women work in industries like leisure, like hospitality, less suited for those social distancing. And some of it may be because of the burden at home, right? Because of childcare. How are women in Wisconsin doing in this climate?
Well, they're subject to the same kind of pressures. Traditionally, women have been in the service industries. Those are the ones that have been more affected. And then on the home front, traditionally also, they've been the main caretakers. So we're seeing, kind of a double burden there for them to go through. And that's true across the country. And it's true certainly in Wisconsin as we look at things. So we're looking for the growth rate in women's employment to come back pretty rapidly once we get over the hump here.
We're talking with Dennis Winters, chief economist for the State Department of Workforce Development. You can join in. Do you have a part-time job or part-time jobs plural as the economy recovers and you find your footing in the economic recovery? Do you have issues with re-entering the workforce? What are the barriers? Join in 800-642-1234. Dennis, older workers, nationally older workers have exited the workforce in higher numbers in the pandemic. You know, that Labor Department data, 55 and above, 40% last year in the labor force. It's fallen to 38% now. We know very well our demographic in Wisconsin skews older. What do you see out of older workers?
Well, a couple of things we're seeing a little longer term in the dynamics on the demographics of our workforce population and the older workers. Yes, the baby boomers are retiring, and they're retiring at a fairly rapid rate as they come of age of the 55 and older, and certainly in the 65 and 70. So that's kind of overtaking and limiting our workforce growth. What's interesting, though, is the labor force participation rate of older workers is the only one that's growing. So those 55 and older, the labor force participation rate has actually been going up for those old workers, where it's been fairly steady across the younger populations.
What might be happening there? What do you see?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is that the older workers, they're working for two reasons. One, because they have to, or two, because they want to. And I think, they're still feeling worthy, and they can do the jobs, and they want to do the jobs. So they want to stay in the workforce and stay active, and there's certainly demand for them to fill positions. So, those things come together, and it's been enticing them back into the workforce.
Let's bring in Michael in Appleton. With Michael, what is your situation?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I ended up leaving my position that I had been at for 2.5 years earlier this year due to mental health reasons. But I've been looking in the labor market for the last month and a half or so now, or a little longer. And there are positions open, in some respect, but most of the work that I've been seeing, a lot of it I'm really overqualified for, or it's unrelated to my position. It'd be a great time to get hired if I was a nurse. The circumstances aren't good, but there are a lot of nurse jobs. But I'm having trouble finding something, both stimulating work that would allow me to make enough for me and my daughter. And then I just had one other thought that from listening to the comments that the guest was just making, my parents actually just retired about a year ago during the pandemic. They were planning to anyway, but so that's interesting as well. But then I think part of maybe why some boomers are staying in the workforce for longer, in the case of people who maybe aren't as well off or maybe didn't have really high earning jobs, is they don't have the savings to fall back on. They didn't. They may not have been able to plan properly for retirement.
Can I ask, Michael, the industry that you left earlier this year?
So, yeah, just broad strokes. What I was doing was in the Fox Valley, working with, the industry is business contracting or phone-based mm-hmm. or electronic communication-based sales and service.
Mm-hmm.
So there are
mm-hmm.
a couple of companies in the Valley who do that, and I was working for one of them. And my industry, I had been working from home for I moved home, and my department lagged a little behind a couple of the others, but I'd been home working from home for almost a year.
Yeah. Dennis Winters, wondering your thoughts on Michael's situation and, you know, the industry as he looks now for the past month and a half for new work. He's either A, overqualified, or it's not in the area that he left.
Well, there's been some transitions. I mean, in, you know, the manufacturing industry has held up pretty well with some of the things, but it's what I call a congregational industries, right? The bars, the recreational entertainment centers and things like that haven't fared so well. But the whole industry, I mean, across the board, the whole economy took a severe bad hit, you know, some things to the degree we've never seen before. Back about a year ago in March and April of last year. So the recovery is coming back. It's not coming back as quickly. Actually starting to come back fairly quickly now, but it hasn't reached the levels that it was before we went into the pandemic recession. So, and as far as the retirement sort of things go, you know, back in the mid 2000s before the housing bust, everybody was retiring early and going to travel the world. And then the recession hit and the housing market and the wealth took a severe hit. What we're seeing lately anyway is you know, the investment portfolios have been on a pretty good incline. How long that's going to last is a little uncertain, but so that's adding a little bit of comfort to some of those retirees' portfolio.
We're talking with Workforce Development Department Chief Economist Dennis Winters is here, a guide to what the economic recovery is shaping up to look like in our state. With your situation, what do you think needs to happen to get Wisconsin to pre-pandemic employment levels? Are you an employer who's looking to hire and expand your workforce as the state opens up? Are you able to find enough qualified employees? Join in what you're seeing, what you're experiencing, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're examining job growth here in Wisconsin, what it means for economic recovery from the pandemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. According to recent Workforce Development Department projections, our state will add more than 243,000 jobs over the next 14 months, give or take. That's an 8% increase. How do you see these numbers bear out in your field? Now that vaccines are getting into arms, has your job rebounded? Is there hiring underway at your work? Have you dropped out of the workforce for now? What are your circumstances? 800-642-1234. We have Chief Economist Dennis Winters from the Workforce Development Agency who stays with us. So, Dennis, you know, we were talking about this at our editorial meeting yesterday. When so many more workers are able to work in jobs remotely, will this open up the job market in a whole new way that people aren't bound to one city or one town to look for work?
Well, yeah, that's quite possible if, in fact, you have a job that you can work from remotely. I mean, manufacturing is a little tough. Construction, obviously, you kind of have to be on site, but it does open up a whole new market for not only workers but for employers. If you can work from anywhere and you have capable, you know, broadband and computer power that allows you to do that, so the labor market will be much further expanded, and that's going to lead to more availability of workers, but also more competition for those workers as it becomes a, you know, national market even. Instead of a local market.
How do you see COVID vaccinations playing a role in what you see in the employment data? Are there some correlations?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was there's a kind of a race between fiscal health and, vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So depending on how which one was coming out, we seem to be on top of that now with the vaccines overtaking fiscal health. And there's some more, fiscal programs to help families and businesses coming down the pike. So I think, we're at the point where we can see the finish line. People are getting more confident that they're going to be able to get out and do things that they used to do at, some of their local establishments, like I say, the congregational venues that they're out there. So on the whole, yeah, we're looking positive. We think, growth will continue both for the economy and for the workforce. But we will be bumping up into labor force constraints here that we have been for the last decade or more as we come out of this recession, and it will be right in front and center with us again.
Yeah, so rising consumer confidence, good. That's certainly a good sign. Emily is joining us from West Bend. Emily, what do you see?
Hi. I am currently working on my house, along with many people in the area, and we have had a bear of a time trying to find contractors to work with us, and I'm hearing the same thing from my neighbors all over the place. What's the economic situation with the construction industry, especially on the residential level? Do you have any information on that statewide?
Emily, thank you. What is that? What do you see there in the construction sector?
Yeah, thanks, Emily. She's kind of the voice of it. There's construction workers or companies are looking for help. They're looking for talent. They can't seem to find enough of it. Some of the commodities they use are going up in price because of bottlenecks brought around by the pandemic. So, and it's interesting, though, it's kind of isolated in the residential sector, and particularly in the single family. We're not seeing a lot of construction and heavy construction or certainly commercial industrial. So the housing industry is a segment, a smaller segment of all that, or a subset. So it's being impacted quite severely because people have some time to do renovation projects. They have a little more cash because they're not spending it on other things. And interest rates are low, and it's a good time to get into the residential sector for purchases. So the construction industry is trying to keep up. They've been pretty healthy, coming back pretty rapidly as far as employment goes. And so they're I guess, one of the harbingers to come of what the labor force situation is going to be when the economy gets back at full power.
Let's bring in John now in Shell Lake. Hi, John.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I just wanted to say that I turned 60 this year, and because of COVID, I was laid off. And when you get laid off, you lose your health care. And when you lose your health care, you go and apply for the Affordable Care Act. Now, I wasn't able to apply for the Affordable Care Act and get health care, which now has opened up the door to give me the opportunity to go out and start my own business, be independent. But before that, there was no way I could quit my job and move on, even try anything different because of the healthcare issue. So in reality, there was one good thing that came out of this. And the fact is that I was able to apply for the Affordable Care Act, get healthcare for myself and my family, and now I can move on and try something different where the other job is no longer there.
John, thank you for that. So John able to access health care and therefore able to hang out his own shingle, Dennis.
Well, great news, John. And there's a silver lining in all of this for you and some other people. And I'm glad to hear you've got the initiative and are moving on to something that hopefully you're going to be enjoying.
Does our state track how many jobs are unfilled because employers can't find the qualified workers they need?
We do not have data on that. We have a lot of anecdotal evidence we hear all the time from businesses pretty much across the spectrum that they're having trouble finding talent. And we've known about this for some time. I mean, I published on it in 2000, and that we were going to come up into this dearth of workers and the constraints on workforce growth, mostly because of the demographics, and it's been a situation for at least the last 10 years. we've had, you know, a couple of recessions and slower growth that have let, as I say, some of the pressure out of the pot. But as soon as the economy has righted itself and come back around, again, looking at workforce, it's a quantity and a commodity that is the dearth of it's, you know, right in our face again.
Dennis, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Dennis Winters is chief economist for the State Department of Workforce Development. Coming up, we continue our employment conversation, zooming in on the manufacturing sector. How is your plant operating in these times? How are orders and your ability to source raw materials? Can you hang on to your higher skilled workers? What about wages? 800-642-1234. News update is next. We're talking about the state of manufacturing here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Job growth boomed last month, as we've been talking about, accelerating at the fastest pace since last summer. The Labor Department's March jobs report showed a healthy gain in manufacturing, adding 53,000 jobs. But manufacturing jobs are down by 515,000 since the onset of the pandemic. Do you work in manufacturing? How is your job? How did you train up? And what's your next step? What should we understand about your field? Join in 800-642-1234. Anne Franz is executive director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. It's a voice for manufacturers in an 18-county region. Anne, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much, Kate, for letting me be part of your program today.
Well, Anne, since we last talked, President Biden's infrastructure plan has come out. It aims to create 2.7 million jobs. What are your hopes for manufacturing as you look at the broader scope of what is being done at the federal level?
Mm-hmm. Well, infrastructure is critically important. These companies are making lots of great products, but they have to get to the customer. So really enhancing our infrastructure from our highways to our bridges, ports, and airports is critical. So we're really excited about an emphasis on infrastructure development. We also really liked in the plan the investment in looking at our supply chain. We actually did a study last fall, where we asked companies that had $3 million or more in revenue, plus 25 or more employees, and we asked them, was your supply chain disrupted during the pandemic? And of the 128 companies that took the survey, one out of four said it was. So we're really excited about a focus on getting our companies in the U.S. to be really the main support of that supply chain.
And certainly when you have disruptions in raw materials, you can't make what you're trying to make and you can't get product out the door and therefore you can't get the revenue back and certainly can really be a huge disruption. So outside of supply chain, how has the pandemic affected our state's manufacturing industry?
Well, they've needed to change how they do business, right? Especially with social distancing. And I think what was one of the benefits that manufacturers had going in was safety is such a huge focus right before the pandemic. If you go into most manufacturing companies, one of the first things you're going to see is signs about safety. And so it wasn't new to them to really have, you know, all hands on deck talking about safety. So they really did a lot to make sure that they were doing practices and putting partitions between their employees that were close, doing remote work, which was unheard of before. So that was a really big change, I think, in the remote workplace that I think some of those people may not come back. It's going to be very interesting to see how things change.
Yeah, you know, we're seeing the growth of manufacturing jobs, but there was a shortage before the pandemic. You know, employers not able to fill these jobs in manufacturing. What do you see now, especially in the northeastern part of the state?
Oh, it's really tough out there. Mm. Literally every day I have people calling me saying, I can't find enough people for all my opportunities. And these companies are actually turning. And so it's kind of interesting. Before the pandemic, when you used to drive down the highway, the billboards used to say, not here, buy my product or service, but hey, we need you to apply for our job. And I've seen that again. I was just driving to work this past morning, and I saw 5 different signs with people trying to recruit. Hmm. So it's a huge issue.
Where are the shortages? What areas of work, when you talk to these manufacturers, what do the jobs entail?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. It was interesting, that survey that I was telling you about that we commissioned UW Oshkosh to do for us. We've done the survey for the past 11 years. And one of the questions we have is, are you having a hard time finding talent? And even back last fall, 71% said they couldn't find the talent that they needed. That's awful. Mm-hmm. The first year of the study, when we asked that question 11 years ago, was 29% not being able to find the workforce they need. And then we asked, what are the occupations that are the hardest to fill? And we consistently, machinists are always number one, as well as just general labor, people, entry-level positions. We also saw engineers, assembly, welders, as well as skilled trades showing up as being hard to fill. And since that survey, those are the jobs that I keep on having people want me to recruit.
Okay, so machinists, assembly, welders, skilled trades, you know, certainly that is a big sector there in manufacturing. How have manufacturers gotten creative reaching out to workers from other industries that have seen job losses?
Mm-hmm. We have personally been looking at hospitality and leisure. Needless to say, because of the pandemic, there's been a huge loss in those jobs. In fact, the state just recently did a report that they found in December, manufacturing unemployment was at 4.3%, where hospitality and leisure was 16.7%.
Wow.
So companies are looking and saying, hey, there is a workforce out there that show up to work every day, know how to work on a team, and we can help take those individuals and upskill them for manufacturing. So that's a wonderful population that really, I think, has a great opportunity to explore a new career. Because with manufacturing, on average, for private industry, has the largest benefit package. From healthcare to 401k to paid vacation. Recently, I was talking to somebody in the hospitality field, and she had worked in hospitality for 20 years. Hmm. She's like, you know, I never realized what I was missing. Manufacturing gives you all these benefits. I don't have any type of retirement investment. I never got paid for my time off. And she was like, wow, I wasted 20 years of my working life. And so for those out there who are in hospitality and leisure, I just encourage you to take a look at manufacturing because it really has good paying jobs with great benefits.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Anne Franz. She is Executive Director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. And you can join in. Do you work in one of Wisconsin's manufacturing plants or in the industry? What are you seeing by way of job openings? What are you trying to fill? And where are your workers coming from? Join in at 800-642-1234. And you mentioned upskilling workers. Or you upskill workers from other industries. Where do you do this? Where does the upskilling occur?
Mm-hmm. Some of it incurs right in the businesses. For the most part, most manufacturers offer tuition reimbursement. Isn't that awesome? I mean, as a parent, I know that it's like, how do I pay for my child's education? And so many of these companies have tuition reimbursement, as well as registered apprenticeship. We also have been doing some skill training as well, working with our technical colleges that have amazing trainers. We've developed training programs like Leadership Academy for frontline production workers. We also developed a machine operator training to upskill in mechanical aptitude and troubleshooting skills. And then we now are just launched the past 6 months, a data analytics course for our members. So there's lots of opportunities. And another great resource for people to go to get upskilled are the job centers that can also help people transition, especially from hospitality and leisure, and as well as retail, to manufacturing.
You know, Anne, even in a tight labor market, the long-term unemployed workers or workers coming from a vastly different industry, they may face a stigma of having gaps in their employment or not having any track record in an industry. And they're trying to explain that to the prospective employer. They're trying to get a foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue in manufacturing? Is that stigma going away in this pandemic?
Well, with record unemployment again, I think people that may have had difficulty are going to have a new lease on their work life, because companies are, there's not enough people for all the jobs. And so I think it's important, if somebody has that gap, is to write a cover letter and explain that. And I think especially now with the pandemic, companies understand that the world wasn't what it was, and that there's a lot of people out there that are great, could be great workers, that because of the pandemic, they didn't have the opportunities to find employment, or also had to stay home because their child was not at the school. They were doing online school. So I think this is a really great chance to get back into the job market.
So really be transparent about what happened mm-hmm. to your career or what's happened to your life as you look for jobs that are, you know, vastly outside your mm-hmm. own training.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. And that's the thing. Companies are willing to give people chances. Hmm. I know so many people that have had that kind of maybe gaps in work history. But our manufacturing companies need you, and they want you to get back in the game. And so this is the time now where I think there's lots of opportunity.
We're talking with Anne Franz, who heads up the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance, as we take a look at how manufacturing is doing in the pandemic. What jobs seem to always be open at your manufacturing plant? How do you get trained up? Is your facility hiring? Are you working as a part-time driver right now or in another part-time job? Share the state of manufacturing where you are, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Anne Franz here in the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Anne Franz, Executive Director of Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. Questions worth exploring here. Is Wisconsin losing higher skilled workers in manufacturing to other cities? What do you see? Also, every day, 10,000 people in our country turn 65. Is your manufacturing facility losing workers to retirement? Who's filling those jobs? 800-642-1234. Anne Franz is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Lori now in Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Lori. What have you experienced?
Good morning. So my granddaughter was working in Kenosha with some of the manufacturing companies. And even though they told her it was full time, she was never able to get a complete 40 hours of work. So therefore, she did not receive any of the benefits that they offer. And I think that's how a lot of the manufacturing companies are now getting away with not paying people and giving them the benefits that they offer.
Lori, interesting. What do you see, Anne, by way of employers keeping an employee just shy of that 40-hour threshold?
At least many of the employers I work with, most people are working overtime because of the fact that there's not enough people to fill all the roles. So I personally have not heard of that, and I can imagine how difficult that was for that woman's, I think it was, granddaughter. So quite frankly, most of the companies I talk to have lots of opportunity for overtime. So I haven't heard that so much.
How do the companies that you work with handle overtime and overtime wages?
Of course, they do the time and a half if it's overtime. Many of them do give employees the option of working overtime. And I think that's an opportunity for people certain times of the year to really enhance how much they earn. So that's what I've heard.
Brian is joining us from Dubuque, Iowa this morning. Hi, Brian.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Good, good. My question is, my statement is this, is that I believe that this service, I think, is out there in a lot of cases, is that there's a lot of recruiting going on, either consciously or unconsciously, with the millennial population. And I think there's a lot of oversight in the fact of overlooking the older population, the folks who are unemployed 50 and above. And a lot of them get defeated because they feel like employers, in essence, are kind of saying, well, you know, you're set to retire soon. We're looking for somebody who's in for the long haul, which I think is a misnomer. And secondly, is that they're not bringing in that talent who still has a lot of years ahead of them and still has a great work ethic, and they want to work. And so I believe that that's the biggest disservice. And secondly, I think that, and I don't want to get off on the wrong trail here, but also maybe lighten up on some of the background checks too. People who might have a slight blemish on their record who are denied a job because of that. And so I think that there's some things that we need to, as a society, just lighten up a little bit on. So I'd welcome your comment on that.
Brian, thank you. And first of all, is there a stigma with older workers?
I think older workers have that work ethic that Brian was sharing. And we know that millennials, on average, are moving from job to job. So quite frankly, we're hiring an older worker. You're probably going to have them a lot longer than the person who is a younger worker. So I think it's really important for companies to look at all ages, of course. And I think also with that being said, that we know that knowledge that the older worker has and those skills. I mean, everyone is looking for experienced people, so there's no reason why an older worker shouldn't be hired.
What about background checks and blemishes on your record? Mm-hmm. How are companies handling that?
Yeah, you know, I think if you are one of those individuals that may have been in the correctional system or had some issues, really look at manufacturing, because I know the majority of our manufacturers hire people with that background. So if you're really frustrated and you're one of those individuals that's like, hey, somebody give me a chance, please consider looking at manufacturing as a career choice.
And all the way to the other end of the continuum, you've really reached out to grade school children to get them to have more of an interest and more of an understanding of what manufacturing is in our state. How is that going?
Really exciting. About 7 years ago, we had math teachers come in for a half-day summit, and we actually paid for substitutes to be in the classroom so those teachers could actually meet with us. And, you know, we said, hey, you had us at hello. We haven't been as engaged as we should. What do you need from us? And one of the math teachers said, you know, I'm tired of kids in my class raising their hand saying, when am I ever going to use this in the real world? And unfortunately, I was one of those kids. I don't know if you were, Kate, too. Math wasn't your favorite or not. And so she was like, you know, is there any way you can show relevancy in what I'm teaching?
Yeah.
And so we developed a program called Get Real Math Videos that showcases how math is used in the real world. And we do it in partnership with math teachers. So the video then is supported by a teacher lesson plan that's written by a math teacher. And one of the examples of our 50 of one of our 50 videos is, what does toilet paper have to do with math? And believe me, there's a lot about math in toilet paper. And so the video is from Georgia Pacific, where a big parent roll comes off a paper machine. It's 7.5 tons. We give the size and dimension, and then we ask the students, how many rolls of 2-ply toilet paper does that machine make every day?
Oh, dear.
And believe it or not, the answer is 1.2 million rolls a day. That's a lot of toilet paper, but of course, during the pandemic, we needed a lot more. And so we have skills from fourth grade through high school featured in these math videos. So students can really see that application and also see what manufacturing careers are all about. And now these math videos are used all across the country, which is really exciting. And this spring, we're filming also Get Real Science videos. So we'll be featuring companies like Plexus, McCain Foods, Georgia Pacific in our new Get Real Science videos. And then what we do, which is kind of fun, because it's all about bringing people together, isn't it, Kate?
Yeah.
Helping people see, you know, their different roles and, you know, talking and learning from one another. So in October each year, we have a big movie premiere of the new videos, where instead of having the actors walk down the red carpet, we have teachers walk down the red carpet. And we then give away $500 cash awards to many schools that attend. And it's a way, again, of partnering and coming with common solutions that meet the needs of industry as well as education, but most importantly, help kids explore careers in a different way.
And as we wrap up here, what can we do with our technical colleges to help ensure that students who finish these programs in tech colleges are able to land a job?
Mm-hmm. That's why we feel it's so important to be a strong partner with the technical college, because the individuals that go to tech colleges usually stay in our area. They're not moving to another area. Our organization actually this year and last year supported $50,000 in college scholarships to the colleges, and the majority was to the technical colleges. And since we started, we've given over $325,000 in college scholarships. So we are actively, and if you haven't looked at reaching out to the technical colleges, they do have a wonderful job board system called Tech Connect, and it's a great way for companies to connect with those students.
Anne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. I really appreciate it.
Anne Franz is Executive Director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. And earlier, we talked with Dennis Winters, Chief Economist for the State Department of Workforce Development. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.